This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. Here are headlines from some of the stories we're following here at NPR News today. President Obama met today with the leaders of Mexico and Canada for a North American summit. The president says the three countries have agreed to aggressive coordinated action to restore economic growth across the continent. And a riot at a California prison over the weekend injured 175 inmates, and more than 1,000 prisoners have been temporarily moved. The Chino prison holds nearly twice as many prisoners as it was designed for. You can hear more details on those stories and much more coming up later today on All Things Considered. Now, the Talk of the Nation opinion page. As an angry teenager, Antavio Johnson wrote a song fantasizing about getting even with the police after he felt he'd been harassed by them. I'ma kill me a cop one day. Songs threatening to kill cops are not new. Back in 1990, Ice-T's metal group Body Count released the song Cop Killer to much controversy. But Antavio Johnson's song specifically threatened two officers by name, one male and one female. Years after he actually wrote the song, the now 20-year-old ran into a little-known Florida statute which put him in jail for 2 years. Anita Allen writes about ethics, health, and privacy rights for The Daily Beast. She explained what happened in her most recent article and questioned whether violent song lyrics should be punishable by jail time. She joins us from the studios of Audio Post in Philadelphia. Good to have you with us.
Thanks, Lynn.
So can you explain how he got the jail time? What was the statute that he was convicted on?
Okay, this is a statute in Florida which makes it a punishable crime to try to corrupt a public servant by threat. And so Johnson allegedly threatened the two police officers who were named in his song. And he was sent to jail for 2 years. Now, this was a plea deal. He was already facing some cocaine charges and probation violations. And so it may well be that he got a better deal by going to jail for 2 years for his song rather than 5 years for breaking probation.
Oh, so he did face other charges in addition to
this. He faced other unrelated, completely unrelated charges.
But in terms of what he was finally convicted on, why doesn't the First Amendment apply here if this was a verbal threat?
Good. So it seems to me there are two questions. One, was he really guilty of the crime that he pled no contest to two counts of? And secondly, if he was guilty, did the punishment fit the crime? And I think that putting aside for a second the First Amendment issues, is a real question whether the guy was guilty at all. This is a statute which is supposed to prevent us from extorting or corrupting public servants by forcing them to do something against their will. And in this case, he didn't force the police officers to do anything against their will. He threatened to kill them, that's for sure, and that's a horrible thing to have done. But he didn't, by making that threat, actually attempt to get them to do something they wouldn't or shouldn't do. And that's why, in my belief, he didn't even break the law. And then secondly, if he were guilty of the crime, which again, I'm thinking he's not, 2 years in jail seems completely unfair, especially in light of the fact that this was a song. And now the First Amendment comes into play.
We want to hear what you think about this. Should Antavio Johnson have gotten jail time for threatening specific police officers in his rap lyrics, naming them specifically? Why or why not? 800-989-8255. Our email address is talk@npr.org, or join the conversation at our website. Go to npr.org and click on Talk of the Nation. Now, I want to be clear about this, Anita. If he had made a threat against a private citizen, that would not have led to any prison time, correct?
That is correct. This statute only applies to public servants. And as you know, the First Amendment isn't absolute, so you can't lie about people, you can't publish their private facts, and you can't assault them, threaten them with imminent bodily harm. But in this instance, Johnson did not threaten the police with imminent bodily harm, or if he did so long ago that there's no reason to think that today he's still threatening them. So there's a real question, again, about whether he actually committed the crime, and if so, whether the punishment fits in light of the fact that he wrote this in the context of an artistic expression.
He wrote this in the context of an artistic expression, but he did name these two police officers. They could easily have felt that they were threatened by this young man. What would be an adequate measured response to that?
Well, you know, you could understand that if days after the police in question had allegedly been unfair toward him, treated him badly, harassed him, he'd made these threats and published them, the police officers would have had justification for feeling threatened, even though he was just a teenager. But 3 or 4 years later, do you still feel threatened because someone several years before made a threat against you which they never carried out? And the law of assault is very clear that assault is only a crime or a tort when there's a show of a force for imminent harm. 3 years later is no longer imminent. So I'm just puzzled by why the police were even successful at getting this charge to stick.
Is there a difference between verbal assault and threat? Did we talk about that? I mean, is there a distinction there?
Well, not really, because what verbal assault means essentially is to threaten someone with imminent bodily harm. That's what assault means in personal injury law. That's what assault means in the criminal law. It means to use words or deeds to threaten someone with imminent bodily harm. So if you take a baseball bat and say to somebody, say to a meter maid, if you give me a ticket, I'm going to bash you in the face, that would be a corruption by threat of public servant. That would be a verbal assault, an assault for both criminal and civil purposes. So that kind of thing where you're in someone's face and you say, I'm going to do this to you right now, that's the kind of assault that I think the law is intended to address, not some sort of, you know, song lyric published now but written several years ago by someone who's never taken any concrete acts towards committing violence against the public servant or the police.
Do you think there should have been any legal consequences for that threat that was contained in that song at all?
Well, clearly, you know, the police and the prosecutors had some discretion here, and they could have decided, let this thing go. It's a song lyric. It's rap music. It happened a long time ago. Not a big deal. We're not going to be hurt. But I think that because the particular officers' names were used, that was probably a stupid thing for this young man to have done. And, you know, a good agent would have told him, don't publish a song with police officers' names in it, threatening them. But given that the names were mentioned, it seems the police might well have had a conversation with this young man, saying to him, you know, look, you're in enough trouble as it is. You don't want to appear on MySpace these lyrics that name two officers. Take that down. Stop doing that. Tell your friends and tell your colleagues to not post music that includes these violent lyrics against a certain person. That kind of warning or conversation would have been, I think, appropriate. But actually, the whole idea of a criminal prosecution here doesn't make sense to me because I don't think he broke the statute. The statute requires you to try to get someone who's a public servant to change their behavior through a threat. And he didn't do that.
Anita Allen is a professor of law and philosophy at the University of Pennsylvania. She writes on ethics, health, and privacy rights for The Daily Beast. We are talking about a young man who was sent to prison for rap lyrics. We want to hear from you. The number is 800-989-8255. And we're going to take a call from Patrick, who's calling from Cleveland. Hi, Patrick.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
I was just wondering, you know, could these song lyrics, you know, could they cause somebody else to do the deed for them? You know, what if somebody else went out and killed these cops because this guy's song is telling them to?
Anita?
That's a very interesting point. What if, although Mr. Johnson's anger had long subsided, he moved on? For him, this was just a poem, just a song. But somebody else in Lakeland, Florida, heard the song or saw the lyrics and said, well, I'm going to, on behalf of Ontavio Johnson, go out and get these two cops. That would be a horrible thing to happen, which I think is a reason to perhaps have the police have a conversation with Mr. Johnson about the lyrics being up there, or for the police department to do what they did, which was they actually asked YouTube to take down the video, and I believe they also may have asked others who had put these song lyrics up to take them down off the internet. That's the way you deal with the problem that the caller is very appropriately mentioning of other people getting the wrong idea and doing something horrible. You deal with it by getting the offensive language out of the public sphere, not by throwing the guy who wrote it in jail.
Yeah, but in this particular case, given that those names are out there and they are still out there, it could be argued that threat still exists and that somebody could pick up on it.
Right, and that's a problem we need to deal with. I'm not sure that means we then go back and say, well, the person who wrote those lyrics, who expressed those sentiments in a song, is therefore guilty of a crime. either a past crime or a future crime. I just don't think it's fair to hold him responsible to that extent for other people's independent acts. Plus, if you read the song or listen to the song itself, it's very vague as to why Mr. Johnson wants to get these cops. And I don't think anybody in their right mind, anyway, would think that there was some particular act of, say, police brutality or unfairness that was going to justify going out and getting those particular people. It's not clear what they did, if anything, to Mr. Johnson.
All right, we're going to take a call from Stan, who is calling from Newton, Massachusetts. Hi, Stan.
Hi. Yeah, look, the fact that this is this person is advocating murder in the form of a song, it doesn't strike me as making it protected under the First Amendment. Al Qaeda advocates murder in the form of songs, too, and I don't think that would be protected under the First Amendment, and I don't think that this is political speech that should be protected under the First Amendment. This is an individual who's advocating the murder of individuals, and the fact that it occurred in the past does not necessarily, in my view, mean that he couldn't have the capability to carry it out, especially in light of his other criminal conduct. So I really think that this is off base to characterize this as a First Amendment issue. I don't think so.
Anita?
Well, you know, the song is not, to me, fairly characterized as advocating murder. The song is, I'm gonna kill a cop someday. I wanna. It's a very personal expression of this young man's feelings at the time. And so it doesn't really advocate that anybody else do anything.
I'm sorry, I didn't say that. Yeah. I'm assuming that he's only talking about himself. The previous caller inquired as to whether someone might be encouraged, like, being swayed by a Rush Limbaugh speech, to carry out some, illegal conduct. But that's not what I'm saying. I'm assuming that, he means exactly what he says. And when he talks and sings in the first person about what he's going to do, that's his intention to carry it out. And I don't see how this could possibly be protected under the First Amendment as political speech. This is
Well, it wouldn't be protected
right, Stan,
as political
speech. I'm going to let
Anita speech.
Respond to you. Thanks so much for calling in.
Thank you. It wouldn't be protected as political speech. The point is that it's a song written several years ago which contains the statement that if certain people get in the way of the songwriter, he's going to get them. He's going to shoot them. So the fact that the language is very hypothetical and not promising imminent harm to these people takes it out of the usual domain of assault law and takes it, therefore, into the domain of protected speech, unfortunately. The song does not contain an imminent threat to these officers, nor, I think, can it 3 or 4 years later now be interpreted as a continuing expression of threatening feelings or threatening intentions toward the officers in question. I definitely think that this young man should not have allowed this song to have been published because it's offensive and it's disrespectful to the police, but it doesn't warrant the response it got, which was a criminal prosecution for corruption by threat of public servant.
I just want to remind our listeners, I want to remind our audience that you are listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Anita, also, what about all the other songs that are out there, some of which are very offensive, some of which may be construed as threatening, that people are listening to all the time, not acting on? And what about those who have created those songs and they're
this
not being held
such
responsible?
This is such a good question, because I'm not a fan, as it turns out, of rap music, but a lot of that medium's technique involves the use of transgressive and profane vocabularies of violence and racism and sexism and rebellion and homophobia and irreligiosity, things I don't approve of, and that's part of the way the music industry has allowed and encouraged these artists to express themselves. So now, do we single out this young man because he made the stupid mistake several years ago of naming names of people he'd like to get? You know, when you're 16 years old, you hate your parents, you hate your teachers, you may even hate yourself. Well, if you made a suicide threat 3 years ago, we wouldn't say, let's call the hotline today for something he did 3 years ago. We have to realize that when time passes, so do feelings of animosity and threats that or hypothetical or contingent threats become less threatening and less serious and less even characterizable as threats. So given the context of the music industry, given the context of what we know about teenagers, it seems inappropriate to address this problem of stuff being posted on the internet that's offensive and threatening in the way that was addressed by the Lakeland police and by the prosecutor.
All right, let's get another call in here from Charles in Chicago. Thanks. Hi, Charles.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good. Go ahead, Charles.
Yeah, my comment is I don't think the young man should have been put in jail. I think he should have gotten probation. I'm wondering, did anything happen prior to the song and he got these officers' names from somebody? Were their names on the street as being aggressive, rough cops? What happened there? He picked their names. And I'll take my comment out there.
Okay, thanks very much. I appreciate it.
The story is that Johnson had himself some personal interaction with these two officers that he regarded as being harassment. And so he wrote the song using their names because, in his own personal experience, these two officers were offensive. The song, by the way, does contain general condemnations of the police and a general sense of ill will toward the police and the lack of respect for the police in general. So I should make that clear.
All right, let's see if we can get another call in here now. Michael from San Antonio. Hi, Michael.
Hi. The reason why I'm calling is because I'm in my line of work, I run into this this kind of general attitude a lot. And what scares me so much about this is that it's just putting it out there to everyone, hey, you know what, we're the bad guys, the police officers are the bad guys, and if they get in our way, let's do whatever we can to stop them, i.e. kill them. And that just frightens me so bad.
Anita?
It is frightening. It is frightening, and we all rely so much on the police to protect us that we hate to be in the situation that we're in right now, which is where there's a whole music industry that's encouraging of this kind of expression. But again, we can't solve that problem by putting particular individuals in jail for their songs. I think we have to address the problem in a different way, through education and through some kind of, I think, police and music industry dialogue, again, not by putting people in jail.
Okay, thanks so much for your call, Michael, and thanks to you, Anita. Anita Allen writes on ethics, health, and privacy rights for the Daily Beast. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you.